Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Next Brave Thing podcast. I'm so excited to have this special guest on today. His name is Chris Cruz. He's joining me from Franklin, Tennessee. And yeah, it's awesome to have you, Chris.
Oh, honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, awesome. So Chris is a husband and he has three kids. Is it three kids?
Three. Yes. Yeah, my youngest just turned two. So I'm in the thick of it.
Crazy. Yeah. So you're a dad, you're a husband, but you're also a creative director and you're a managing director of a nonprofit initiative. You have the best Instagram. It's full of creativity and punchy statements. but you've gone from like, and also, this is something that we kind of have in common, but not really. You're a jiu-jitsu purple belt.
Yes. 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 Do you practice, do you train jiu-jitsu?
One time.
Oh, shit. I thought we were about to be like, forget every other topic. Let's talk training. All right, let's go.
No, I tell you what, I did one session and I felt such like a girl, like slapping people. Like I felt so uncomfortable hitting people. So I don't know. So what is purple belt? Is that like?
So there's white belt, blue belt, purple belt, brown belt, and black belt. So I'm at purple. I haven't trained in like probably 4 months because I tore my Achilles in November. Yeah. So I've been in rehab twice a week, retraining how to walk after surgery.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah,
it is. But I don't recommend anybody ever do it.
Yeah, wow. So yeah, jiu-jitsu, I can never say it right. I got roped into it, but I was like, this is really cool. This is an investment though. You have to really, but I was, I was very impressed. So I do, I feel like, I feel like I have a window into what that is.
Yeah.
But also I want my audience to know you're also an author of the book, The Practice of Being with Jesus, A Daily Path into God's Presence, Curing the Restless Life and Living as a Disciple, which is just full of goodness in that title. So that, so with that, I will mention you're not only a creative director, but you were a pastor for what, 15 years?
Oh yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically crazy. 15, yeah.
Yeah. So you have one of your posts, which was so striking to me because I recently moved back to Australia. So it does feel like starting over. And you described starting over at 37. So tell like kick us off. Tell us a little bit about what life was like as a pastor and then transitioning or basically reinventing yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the when we decided my wife came from back from a retreat in Franklin, Tennessee. She had come just outside of Nashville. For those of you that are in other parts of the world, it's just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. So big city, Nashville, just about 20 minutes outside of that is Franklin, Tennessee. And she came back and she said, I want us to consider moving out there. And I said, at the same time, I was feeling like my season of being a pastor was coming to an end. I felt like I could sense that there was change. I could sense that there was something different happening and that a lot of what I had thought I was going to be doing was starting to feel less and less both likely in one capacity and less interesting in another capacity. So it wasn't simply just opportunity was shut down. That's not the case. I think I could have stayed in that world for a really long time for opportunity's sake, but it was feeling less and less kind of like, I don't think this is likely to go the way that I want it to go. Not that the opportunity was going to dry up, but that it just wasn't going to go the way that I thought this was going to go. And that started to become less and less interesting. And so then the finding myself also going, I need a break from this pace, this way of life, this way of doing things, this, the day in, the day out of being a pastor, teacher, a leader of people and teams. And I needed to kind of like reset, so to speak. I had, so when she said she wanted to move across to the country, So Franklin, one of the things that really stood out to me was the fact that Franklin is obviously in the South in the United States, and it has so many churches. So there was not this sense of like, I'm going to go plant a church, start a new church. I was like, I know too many people here. It'd be so weird to do that. And then I was like, I'm not going to do that. But for so many years, that's what I thought I was going to go do, lead a church. That's what I thought was going to happen. That's what I thought the path was going to be. And for all intents and purposes, that's what it would look like it was going to be. But realizing, like over time, realizing I don't know if that's really it. And I started to go down a route of going, all right, what can I do if we move, if we relocate our family, if we change to an entirely different city where we know a handful of people to do community and life with, but mostly just to go to a new city to start over in a different city and explore what that looks like to grow and heal. Not that there was things terribly wrong, but it was like, you don't realize how much healing you need until you step out of an environment that you're in and you go, oh my gosh, how many of your habits, how many of your frame of mind, how many things are reinforced by culture but aren't really yours? How many of your own ambitions are not really your ambitions, they're actually the ambitions of the culture that you kind of take on as your own, and you realize that's not actually a driving passion for me. It was a driving passion to fit in. And that isn't what I want, but it's what the environment around me wanted. So I kind of took it on as my own, and it's not really what's inside me. So when we moved, I realized like, okay, I don't know what we're going to do, but I'm not going to do that. And so I had to make a change and figure out how to do that. So reinvention started, and stop me at any time with any questions or anything, because I can just keep going. Awesome. Mm-hmm. The journey of reinvention started in different ways, right? My wife kind of examining, where do we want to live? Where do we want to move? And me following her vision of where she wants to be and where she wants to live with our kids and where do we want to raise our kids at. And part of that was taking honest looks at myself and going, if I wasn't pastoring, what would I be doing? And I started to go on a journey. There's a book called The Artist Way.
And oh, I love
by, yes. Yeah, so great
book. I'm doing it right now, actually.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Yeah, My wife went through it and it transformed her life. And she's like, you need to do it. Yes. And so I was like, okay, I'll do it. And so I started to go through it. I didn't finish the book entirely, but I feel like I got to the spot where my wife does the morning pages still for years, like it's all so that good. Kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I started to examine like, what were the lives that I could live? What was the parts of me that were shut down? The creative in me that didn't get to be expressed anymore because of all the roles I took on early on in life, which were ministry leadership roles. Right away, I was thrusted into at a really young age, like thrusted into leadership roles, thrusted into, which I loved. I love leadership. Like leadership for me is still a passion point, but I realized like I had adopted so many things so quickly that there is, for lack of a better term, using the language of The Artist's Way, was like this creative child that was kind of needed to be protected, needed to be brought back to the forefront and going, hey, what does that child want to do and be? And so going like, wait, where did my creative journey get stuck? How did it get stopped? Why did I give up on these things? Because I had been a graphic designer for a long time doing freelance work before I ever came to being a pastor. I was doing that. Art and design was a part of my family's history for so long. My mom's a painter. My dad's a painter. My brothers are artists. Oh, your brother's a painter. Yeah. All of them do artwork. My son is like very much the same. And it's just like, I told my mom, what was in the water? Like, how did you raise us so differently that all of us have such a bent towards art and creativity? But whether it was fashion, design, all this stuff was always a part of my life. And I realized when I started getting into ministry, a lot of that started to kind of lost, so to speak. It never died. I would say it never died, but it definitely got lost. And I realized like, oh, I love strategy. I love leadership. I love creativity. I love design. I love business and I love brands. And I love seeing how these brands can shape the world we live in. And I was like, I want to explore this. I want to figure that out. And the way I look at reinvention is like, it's the idea like, to change and grow doesn't mean your last season was a failure. And I think that was the biggest step for me is that most people change and they look at their past as like that's a failure because it didn't materialize into X, Y, and Z. But I'm realizing that wasn't a failure. I don't think a caterpillar, I'll say it like this. I don't think a butterfly looks at the stage of a caterpillar and goes, that was a failure. Mm. Even though it's a completely different reality now. Like the caterpillar and the butterfly reality is completely different. So it's recognizing like just because I'm changing and adapting who I am, I get that past seasons, even how people related to me is going to change and how I'm going to relate to the world is going to change. And that's going to be okay. And it's going to be painful at times. It's going to be hard. It's going to be, you're going to question whether you made the right choice. You're going to question whether you really gave up on something you spent a ton of time in that was like, this is a really bad career move. But realizing it was necessary and it's been very fruitful for me.
Yeah. I mean, you can see the payoff like for taking the risk. And I love the artist way. I'm running a group right now because
that's awesome.
It's so
the imaginary lives, the five imaginary lives, like where would you be? I love it. Going on artist dates, the whole thing.
Yeah. I need to do that again. Oh my gosh. That's so good.
I mean, I'm not faithful to it. My wife's faithful to Morning Pages. I was for a season while I was deep in the like self-discovery and letting go and grieving outcomes that didn't come to be. And I was grieving what my past way of doing life was like. Because when you're a pastor and a teacher in that way and a spiritual teacher, there's a way of life that's just so different. Yes. Not wrong, just different.
Yeah. So true. And so I think you're hitting on something really important because I have just put out a couple of podcasts on transition because a lot of people are finding themselves in transition right now. And so speaking to...
We're so afraid of the ending too. We're so afraid of it.
Oh, I know. And so everything you're saying brings so much hope because you're like a few steps ahead of everyone else. Mm. You're in the new season.
That's awesome.
So like things work out.
I feel like I'm so many steps in that behind, so it's great.
Yeah. No, you're ahead of me, so this is great. So tell me, well, how did you navigate the... Because it's sort of an identity crisis, not a crisis, it's a strong word.
For sure, like, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but like a sense of like I've been doing one thing for 15 or so years. I've seen myself one way. And just before we got on the call, you said you feel most like yourself right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think like to me, that's the goal of any transition is that you're transitioning into being more like you, you know. And so
truly comfortable in yourself.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about what that kind of peeling back the onion layers, so to speak, of like healing and finding the true Chris has been like.
So here's the interesting thing, right? I think there's things that are very true for you with the stage of growth you're at and where you're at in life that they're not like, I wouldn't look back and go like, I was being fake my entire life.
Oh,
I wouldn't
totally.
Look, it's not like that.
And you're so authentic.
It's like, it's truly looking at it going like, in that season of that stage of life, that place where I was, that felt so real to me.
Yeah.
That, and then the moment it wasn't supposed to be my stage of life, it didn't feel real to me anymore. Not my faith or my relationship with God and none of that. Like that's anchored. That feels real for me, still real for me. I'm talking about the way of doing a career, like a job, and a focus on what I'm, the outputs of my life. Like, what am I putting out into the world? I realized I'm not meant to be doing the church ministry world as like my career and that. So I realized like that part of me, once it was not meant to be what I did day in and day out as my vocation and what I was most passionate about it just felt like now I was like recognizing like this feels inauthentic. This doesn't feel like I'm supposed to be doing this. And so, but it's that journey of kind of feeling alive is partially connected to the pressures of your roles you have. So I feeling the freedom to not feel like I'm, I have to be something for somebody. Not feeling like I have a weight of massive responsibility about how I am carrying something for a group of people. Feeling like I was in the past, like my life mattered in the sense of like, I felt like I was like, I feel like I'm carrying something that's so big on my shoulders sorry about that. That I'm on the realities of, I've got this weight on my shoulders of trying to help something move forward.
Yeah.
Something that was like, all right, I'm responsible for like phrasing a terminology would be like a movement, a way of looking at the world that we're trying to help keep going forward. And I really do think in movements. I really do think that movements shape the world still. And I think brands mm-hmm. and all that kind of do that. But I had all this pressure that I felt like I was like, I don't know how to describe it outside of pressure. Like I felt like pressure that I didn't know I had until I got rid of it.
Yeah.
Until it wasn't there. I didn't realize how much of it was there. So like talking, feeling like I was constantly fighting for what mattered to me, but realizing I don't know if I really would still fight for that if I didn't have to do X, Y, and Z, if that wasn't mm-hmm. my job. I don't know if I would be on the front lines of that every single day, day in and day out.
Yeah.
And what if my career path, my future, my dreams weren't dependent on me caring about things that feel like they aren't at the core of me right now? And would I still be okay? And if I don't care, if I don't express the same way of caring for X, Y, and Z that I did before, am I still good? Like there's so many of these wrestling, like, do I still, is that stuff still important to me? Does this stuff still matter? And some of it does and some of it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it you realize what's good and it stays and what isn't, get rid of mm-hmm. and move on.
Yeah. I love how you're kind of giving language to that because you're right. I can so relate because having similar roles to you, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. that pressure really does make you feel like you can't relax into being yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's not that you're being fake. It's actually that just pressure kind of mm-hmm. takes from your, I feel like being ourselves is supposed to feel relaxed or supposed mm-hmm. to feel at peace at least.
The thing that I think about too, it's like I view pressure differently too now. Like for example, like there's a pressure I feel right now that is connected to the opportunity to build what matters to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel the pressure. I'm like the pressure to show up and do the work that I want to do. It matters. Mm-hmm. Like I want that pressure. It's a bit of a privilege to have that kind of pressure. The pressure to care about things that I don't feel like I care about, that is a pressure mm-hmm. I don't want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like where I'm like, and I don't care about that. And I feel like I have to now.
Yeah. And I think you're getting honest with yourself is kind of scary because you're like, I don't know what's on the other side. So it takes a lot of courage.
Yeah. Like what's going to happen to me on the other side of this? Like, how is this going to work out?
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. The world's when you're in it and when you're out of it, what you realize about yourself and how much, I'll say it like this, like I had to heal from a lot of stuff still that weren't mm-hmm. anything that was like, oh my gosh, I was wronged. Not like that, though there's parts of me that had to grieve or heal from pain caused from being in different roles in life. And I definitely had to heal. And I realized some habits I had that just don't serve me well when you're not mm-hmm. in that kind of role. When you're not in a pastor role, there's certain habits and ways of viewing yourself that just don't serve you well outside of that role. They serve you well there maybe, but when you're not in it, they just don't serve you well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much freedom of like stripping back that, but mm-hmm. I totally get what you mean about healing.
Like, a simple example would be this. The church is notoriously hard to navigate enjoying an alcoholic beverage.
Oh yeah.
Like just the idea that just the pressure of like, can I be seen in public with a alcoholic beverage? Because how is it going to communicate to X, Y, and Z? And everybody means well-intentioned, right? They're like, everybody's well-intentioned is like as if me drinking a beer in a bar is going to send somebody into an alcoholic spiral. Like, but there's this pressure of like, don't have the appearance of evil, or, hey, you don't want to look like you're compromising. You want to stay with like, you know, above reproach. There's all terminology around a form of control that you don't really realize is there that you're like, wait a second, time out. Why is this a difficult thing? I don't get this. And realizing how much pressure you have for things like that, where I'm like, oh, now I can just go enjoy a beer and it not have all these like attachments to it. I can go and grab, I can go to the wine and spirit store and pick up a bottle of gin to make gin and tonics for me and a friend. And it's not like I'm worried, who's going to see me here? Is this going to feel weird? Are people going to wonder, like, what's he doing getting alcohol? Like, there's things like that that I'm just like, I don't like those pressures on me. I don't like feeling like that. And I don't live with compromise still. I have a, I have values of myself. So I'm not, but I'm like the pressure of watchful eye on my all of my behavior. That felt like it was starting to mess with the sense of self.
Yeah, but guys who are listening who have never been maybe a leader or a pastor or whatever, Chris just mentioned one of the many things that is taking up mental real estate in your internal world. Like there's so many little things like that that add up that you don't even know that you're thinking about. Like don't even get me started about dating.
Oh yeah. I can't even imagine getting, getting married early on was a great thing. Cause I'm like, I don't have that pressure of like, how do I navigate dating in that world?
Yes. Oh, it's an interesting space, but what a freedom coming into like realizing it's even a freedom of like, oh, I don't even think about that anymore, which is always a good feeling. So good.
Totally.
But I love all this. So tell me a bit more about creativity and how you fostered that. And Julia Cameron from The Artist Way talks about like nurturing your artist child.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about like what creativity or nurturing that has looked like for you.
So ever since I was a kid, drawing art was always a part of my life. So design class was my favorite class in one of my favorite classes in high school, like just fashion was always a part of my upbringing, was voted best dressed in high school. Like just that like was always a part of who I was. So like it always felt natural to have an element of creativity in my life or expressing, putting my imagination to use. Like Sir Ken Robinson, if you're familiar with his work, he's passed, but Sir Ken Robinson has a book and a whole, he's like one of the most famous TED Talks on creativity and the reality around creativity being, applying your imagination, the ability to take your imagination, applying it. And it's fascinating stuff. But for me, it's recognizing like, okay, my ability to take unseen realities, make them visible, how to take ideas and put them into something, whether it's visual or whether it's language, or I always had this bent towards design and feeling like I really enjoyed looking at colors and how things were laid out, how, I really struggled when things were sterile or just like plain, and not plain because they're minimalistic and modern, plain because they lacked any kind of like sense of intentionality, any kind of sense of like that thought was thought through. I don't care if it's not my taste. The taste is different. Like, that's a different thing for me. Like your taste, we can not like the same thing and appreciate the creativity behind it and be like, I don't like it at all. It's not my taste, but it's deeply creative. Films are that way, right? It's like, people will love movies that I'll go, I hated that movie. So creative. Done so well and so interesting and telling such a compelling story. But I hated it. I'm like, so many people like Wicked. I fell asleep like 15 minutes into Wicked. I'm like, this movie felt so boring. And the storyline just puts, there's like, if I say that to people, they're like, some Wicked fans are just like, we're coming for you. Get ready for the hate mail. But it's for me, creativity is constantly figuring out, am I letting myself express myself in the ways that feel real to me? And am I doing that just for fun? Am I like able to arrange my house the way that I want to? Am I clothes the way I want to? Am I able to, if somebody likes to paint, are they painting? If someone likes to build businesses, they're building businesses. Are they, if they like to dance, are they dancing? Are they, if they like to write, are they writing? Are they expressing themselves and allowing this sense of you are, therefore you create? Like there's no question about that. It's just like you exist, therefore your ability to take what is in your mind. Okay, this is what makes you humans different than every other thing on the planet, is your ability to be conscious and your conscious ability to extend your will beyond your body and be able to have a conscience that understands what's happening around it and have intentionality around your choices to create things and move things versus the animal kingdom or anything like that. There's a consciousness around how we operate, and that extension of our will beyond ourselves, like we start to get into a really interesting place on why humans matter. And this is why people get frustrated with AI and all that kind of stuff. We can get into a conversation because I'm day in and day out with AI. I'm operating in it on a constant basis.
Right.
But the conversation around you are a human and inside of you, your ability to think and forecast the future, your ability to have a conscious thought, not just about right now, but about tomorrow. You're not just instinct oriented. You're not just survival oriented. You're not, it's just a chemical reaction, but you have the ability to think beyond yourself, having this meta moment where you can pull out of yourself and look towards something and beyond to your past. All of those components lead to a sense of self and going, are you taking that self and expressing yourself and mattering and showing up how you matter and show up in the world? Whether it's you love flowers and you love to garden in your backyard and therefore you do it. That there's no question around like, should I? Am I able to? Can I?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in the artist way, they talk about like everyone, well, a lot of artists want to have their unique voice and like, you know, but if you don't have a sense of self, you don't have self-expression, you know, like,
Correct.
And so tell me a little bit about like, well, even because you're in a creative role now, a huge thing for creatives is like, how do I provide for myself? And like the pressure of like, oh, I've got to, even you're working with brands and there's an algorithm and the pressure around creativity and meeting standards or this works versus like, oh, I'm kind of like abandoning myself here. Like, tell me a little bit about that, that kind of challenge or tension for creatives.
Okay. So art and design are two different things for me. So art is like you're getting to express that because you're expressing it. Design usually has an intention and a purpose for something. And art, its purpose lives in the expression of that artist. That artist wants to express something, some kind of perspective, some kind of way of seeing the world, some way of expressing their being in that world. They want to express that, whether it's through photography, whether it's through they're doing graphic design still, but it's still an expression of art. It's not unto kind of designing unto some purpose or serving. It's serving something. It's applied differently. So I live in the intersection of creativity and strategy. I live at the intersection of going as a creative director. My job is to bridge the gap between leadership strategy and design and creativity that makes a connection through like story, through realizing like, okay, my objectives are clear. They're not just simply expression. They're not simply, I want to make this so that it exists, which is super valuable. You may not make money that way. That's fine.
Right.
That's fine. I'm okay with you not making money. I do get frustrated when they're like, I'm not making money with my art. I'm like, you've got to look at it and decide, do you want to be a business or not? Like if you just like, there's a difference between being able to go like, I love my art, therefore I create, versus I love my art and I want it to make me money. Now, if you want your art to make you money, that's a different journey you have to take your skill sets, and you have to figure out how you're best going to be able to position yourself to make money. And that's, I'm in the design creativity and the business outcome. Like that's where you're seeing even a lot of designers and different creatives in that space freaking out about AI because they've been in a commodity-based perspective. Their services are offered for a fee. They make stuff and they're watching their skill set get kind of eaten at, whether it's photography with AI image generation or whether it's typography or design stuff, and they're watching AI advance in such a way that that skill set is starting to feel like the barrier to entry is much lower.
Yeah.
You don't have to work as long at the skill, which is kind of scary. I want to do a whole thing about that, eventually talk about that at one point. But the thing that I'm doing is going, there is a strategy connected to outcomes for businesses and figuring out how do we help you take creativity and take storytelling and take all of these other elements of that form a brand, customer experience, all of that. And we weave that into a company to help that company grow and scale. I'm not scared of profit. I'm not scared of, the way that I look at it is like this, is a thriving company and a thriving brand has a thriving purpose, thriving profit for sustainable impact and thriving people. So it's not a people over profit thing. It's not a people matter more than profit. I'm like, if you don't have profit, you can't care for people. And if you don't have if you have a purpose and you don't have profit, you have a charity. And if you realize, if you don't have, if you have a purpose, if you have a tons of profit without any kind of purpose, then you can get toxic in the pursuit of how you make that money. Yeah. These are all a dance together. Purpose, profit, and people all play together. And that's where my creativity comes into play, is around the idea of understanding leadership, understanding strategy, understanding design and creativity and brand. That is where I end up playing, where my creativity goes. I love problem solving. I love thinking about how the consumer is going to experience this product. And I love thinking about, like, we're working with a school that's thinking about a new innovative way of educating kids that doesn't require them to go to a four-year program. And they, in the States, four-year university program, they're going, we want them to create, they said, we want to create an alternative that is looked at as just as important as going to a four-year school. Well, from that point, how do you position that company in the hearts and minds of people that is not looked at as less than, but looked at as a real viable option? And I love that moment of creativity and thinking about how visuals, art, and design can play into that and create that outcome. So that's where I look at the difference between trying to make money with what I do versus like making money as a painter and figuring out how as a I paint paintings. Like, that's a real struggle. My dad's a painter, and he's always like, they have their art shows, they have their things, and then half of them become like, they're trying to figure out how to do YouTube channels where they then talk about how to paint so that people can follow their and sell their course. Like, there's so many different ways that they're trying to like bring in commerce through what they're doing. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know if it's meant to, I don't know if that one's supposed to, but you got to make money somehow. So go get it.
And I love that you're clearly defining it, because I know a lot of young creatives, they feel resentment towards their workplace because they're like, we're just churning out these things. It's not creative, but it's like, but it's, that's the context. Like, I love that you're kind of giving context for creativity.
That's what we do. Guys, that's what we do. Like, we are not here just to, and here's the thing, we're not here just to make things pretty, look good on a design level. If our designs really move the human soul, and what we want to do is, like, there's nothing wrong with it moving the soul towards an outcome that's bringing profit towards a company and making a purchase. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, there's not this like enemy of work and enemy of money that somehow means your creativity has now been taken advantage of or exploited.
Yeah, that's so good. I'm curious to know, this is sort of like segueing a little bit, but I sort of had this question, I because I'm thinking about a lot about vision and being a creative, like, it's really can be, it's a, such a faith step as a creative, a creative entrepreneur. You're like stepping out. And in some ways, a lot of people lack clarity around their vision because they don't want to get their hopes up and it not happen, or how have you crafted vision? I know it's kind of like gearing in a different direction, but like, what, how, like, how have you crafted vision for your life? Like, and so, you,
I mean, if you can finish your question there, I don't want to interrupt you. What was the last
part? No, I mean, I think like, I think I've been, it's a huge thing just working with creatives is like, how do you cultivate vision and goals and, you know, all those sort of things. And I think if your life was one way, like being a pastor, there was a specific vision there. And so what does it look like to actually have vision now? Like, obviously there's company's vision, but then there's personal vision. So tell me a bit about how you do that.
When I transitioned out of being a pastor, one of the things I did was I reached out to five friends, and I took this exercise from somebody I learned, and I said, tell me why we're friends. Don't tell me because I'm a nice person. Like, why are we friends? Why me versus anybody else? Like, what is it about me that is uniquely different to why we're friends? It's a vulnerable question. And I had the answers came in, and I just cried for like a whole day as I read all the reasons, and they were so different than what I would even have said. They were so different, because I think sometimes we're so close to our vision statements or our things that we write about ourselves that we don't even realize the most consistent ways we're impacting lives. And when that came in, I restarted to reformulate like my sense of self. I was like, man, wow, I didn't know that this is how I consistently impact people, but it's most natural for me. That's what I do. And what's crazy was, as a pastor, I probably would have hoped they would have said these other five things. Mm-hmm. But they said these five things. And those five things, I was like, wow, those feel like they're very different than what I would have said my role would have wanted to hear. Mm. And so I took those and I started to formulate better language around how I function and better language around what really fuels me. And I started to craft language around like realizing like, oh, I'm really here to fuel that pioneer spirit in people. It's less about what I'm doing. It's less about, like, I hope that we were meeting with a mentor in the agency space, someone that has been really successful, has worked with major brands that you would know as a brand agency. And they've done incredible work for all these big, big, big companies that you would know. And we were talking about these manifestos, these statements about who you are. And like, it's less about a vision of a future state, though that matters, but more so about an understanding about who you are and how you operate. And it was like, it was so refreshing for me because that feels clear. Mm. How I operate and how I think, and that feels clear. What's less clear is like, what exactly is the thing I'm going to be doing in 10 years? I'm not quite sure what that is. I will tell you the amount of money I want to make. Mm-hmm. And that is a great, really refreshing thing to not feel scared to talk about how much money you want to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because in ministry, that's kind of scary to talk about because people have a taboo around all kinds of stuff like that. So yeah. to feel like income is not a scary thing because of what it enables you to build with your family and your life and realize, okay, this is what I want to create for my life and I need income to do that. So I'm not scared to position myself in such a way to best increase the likelihoods of making that kind of money. Mm. And so when I started to get a sense of why I'm here, like I want to be able to feel like every time I get interjected, like I get injected into a situation that the original fire that people had to do something gets awakened. The sense that like, man, that deeper sense of purpose that we feel that isn't connected to exactly to a future state, though they can tell you what the future's like. They can give you a sense of like, this is what it looks like. I want to fuel that. So I feel like I'm here to really fuel that pioneer spirit in people. Mm-hmm. And then how I do that is there's this like really relentless, never settling attitude inside of mm-hmm. me. There's this like, and these are all things I learned from feedback into me versus me sitting down at a table and writing them out as pithy statements about myself. It was friends telling me this is how they interacted with me or experienced me. This like never settle in a good way mentality, this constant chase of wisdom, like always looking to grow. And there's this, the willingness to do the work that no one else is willing to do. The willingness like to do the hard work on your soul, hard work on who you are as a person, to not run away from that hard work. And to feel like there's a sense of like you can make history, like you could do this. So there's mm-hmm. these kinds of things that I feel really operate in me that fuel me more than this sense of like I have a vision state that I see that I want to become or want to do. I feel like I'm in this spot where I'm going, there's a lot of evolution that's going to take place. Mm. And I'm not quite sure how the evolution is going to work itself out because I didn't picture where I was today right now.
Yeah.
I didn't picture this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
This wasn't on the vision board.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really anchoring, coming back to identity. Like that's mm-hmm. the vision of—
If you know you.
Yeah. The clarity of who you are.
Yeah. So like, go ahead.
No.
Well, I was going to say the thing that one of the last things too is like, they were like, I feel like I want to inspire everyone to greatness, that there's greatness mm-hmm. inside of you, that you, like these things are pillars for me. This is how I function. This is how I operate. Mm-hmm. Place me into a role. That's what's going to come out of me in that role.
Yeah.
Place me in this role. That's what's going to come out of me in that role. When I changed mm-hmm. jobs after my first job in ministry, I knew myself enough to recognize within the first 8 months of that new role that this was not the right fit because of what I knew about myself.
Yeah.
And I quit.
Yeah. And that's
I was the, a director of an experiential. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was a director of an experiential space for a nonprofit, a leading nonprofit, a widely recognized nonprofit. And I
remember hearing about that.
So I had an 8-month stint with them where I was going to help them build this experiential showcase museum meets like technology and innovation. It was amazing. It is amazing. Mm-hmm. The experience is crazy. I love it. They built it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. But the role that I was in changed. And when that role changed, I recognized that's not me. And I'm not going to succeed. And I know I'm not going to succeed. It's not a matter of like, you don't love me, you don't see me, and you don't value me. I'm going, your need isn't me.
Yes. Yep. Oh, that's so good. Because I think a lot of people would think of scarcity of like, oh, what other job will come along? I need to provide for my family. But I love if your core value is we're never going to settle.
Yeah. I was like, I couldn't do it. There was too many similar signs to my last role that I had to go and say, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah. Wow.
And so when I don't want people to think I'm super heroic. I had intentionally set aside a certain amount of money that would give me a runway for say was like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
I set aside a bare bones what my family could live on.
Yeah.
For 3 months, and I set that aside. That way, when that day came, I could quit and realize I had something to hold on to. I didn't need to because fortunately I had another role that was ready to step into it.
Yeah, wow. And that's so wise. Wow, this is so cool. And especially because I know so many people are going through transition and even just in closing, like, what word of encouragement would you give for someone who's like in that middle dark space where they don't have full clarity about what's going to be revealed?
Yeah.
What word of encouragement would you give to that person just sort of in closing today?
Listen, the bamboo tree grows underground for long periods of time. There's no signs of visible growth. It's all underground. And if you compare that bamboo tree to any other kind of vegetation or tree, it looks like a failure because there's no visible growth. Then all of a sudden it shoots out of the ground 90 feet in a week. And all of a sudden it's growing and people might think, where did that come from? All the while, the bamboo tree knows I've been growing underground with nobody watching me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I haven't been growing. I just haven't been growing in the public eye. So hidden growth where no one knows about it, no one's watching and you're in the dark place, is the necessary endings will become the soil for your new growth. So you're fine. You're going to get through it. And on the other side will be visible growth for yourself and for others, not for validation, but because it's just a natural reality of the hidden growth you've done.
Yeah. Awesome. That's such a great analogy. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time and coming on the podcast today. So we'll be linking all your details, where to follow you in the show notes. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on today, Chris. It's been so awesome chatting to you.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.